Chapter 32. Langley, Virginia.
"There's activity at Tombstone,"
the voice on the phone said.
"You'd better come down and take a look."
Dana Morton left her mini war room and took the trip in the elevator four levels down to the SatRes Solutions room. The room was the size of a basketball court and had its own energy source and ventilation system. The walls were 6 feet thick, and the room was heavily shielded from the possibility of an electromagnetic pulse. It was set on rockers to ease the room through any tectonic activity up to a Richter 9. The entire level was carved from bedrock for added coverage. This was one of the CIA's facilities that was built to stay in business following a full nuclear exchange. To enter the room, Dana needed to flash her ID to a quartet of armed Marines at an up-armored security station. She also removed any metal she was wearing. She surrendered the tiny silver hoop earrings that were a gift from her father when she graduated Wellesley. She also handed over her shoes in return for a pair of felt slippers. Her belongings went into a plastic tray that was placed on a shelf over a plastic label with her name engraved on it. She visited the room that often. The room had 30-foot ceilings with four observation stations monitoring current missions or missions in planning on banks of screens, some as broad as 6 feet diagonal. Men and women in casual clothing, no belts, jewelry, or piercings, and their trademark slippers sat at consoles. Agency wags called them the Velcro Squad. They were working joysticks and wireless keyboards with their attention fixed on the ranks of screens displaying surveillance video, high-res satellite imagery, and interactive maps. The center of the room was dominated by a row of tabletop touchscreen monitors.
"Coffee?"
Molly Kramer asked as she stepped forward to meet Dana.
"No, thanks,"
Dana said. The coffee down here was infamous, even in the agency where coffee was enjoyed for its restorative properties only. Velcro Squad Java was thick enough to float a bullet in. Two sips and anyone would be wired enough for 48 hours of staring into monitors, literally watching paint dry.
"The cloud cover over Tombstone is a bitch," Molly said.
Molly was one of those tiny, peanut-sized women who could be anywhere between 40 and 60. She moved like a teenager, and her pale blue eyes crinkled when she smiled, which was often. Dana was always struck at finding someone so chipper in what was nicknamed the Doom Room. They stood at one of the largest monitors in the array, assigned to Tombstone and Operation Bull Rush. On the screen were murky images breaking up in clouds of pixelation. Visible through the digital haze, Dana could recognize the Young El compound in Sarawak.
"We've amped the images and stepped them up," Molly said.
She worked a joystick to turn the image to super high contrast.
"But there's a miles-high weather system stacked up over the site."
"You said you had activity," Dana said.
"There's a vehicle making its way around the perimeter. It's been moving in a methodical pattern around the outside of the compound. It's not a new arrival. There hasn't been anyone in or out. It was stored inside one of the buildings. It's smaller than a truck."
The images clearly showed a boxy shape moving slowly around on the screen. It would roll along in a straight line, then turn and following alongside its previous path. Little detail could be seen.
"It's a bush hog,"
Dana said.
"Excuse me?"
Molly asked.
"A bush hog,"
Dana said.
"When I was a girl, my grandfather would let me drive his on the farm in Maryland." "You can tell that by looking at that squiggly mess?"
Molly asked and squinted at the screen.
"I can tell by how it's moving. It's cutting down the brush outside the fence. They're making a killing field."